The Europe Report with Kanan Lipschitz.
Kanan, welcome to the show. I must apologize for the technical difficulties that we're experiencing. How are you and how are things in Europe?
Healthy. Things in Europe are complicated when health is concerned, but otherwise doing well. Thank you.
Some very interesting news coming out of Europe. I see that with regards to the controversy that surrounded Shakespeare for so many years, especially one of his books, The Merchant of Venice, where there was blatant anti-Semitism, things are actually changing with regards to this. What can you tell us about that?
Right. A children's author called Michael Morpurgo, he's quite famous, he's working on an adaptation of the 10 most important Shakespeare plays for children. And in that selection process, he told the Times of London that he was considering adding the Merchant of Venice, but then thought better of it because of the anti-Semitic content in it. Shylock is a pretty greedy moneylender whose insistence on his trade really ruins the protagonist's life. He decided that since this is geared toward young readers of about 7-8 years old, he wouldn't want that to be their first encounter, the first time they ever hear of a Jew. And so he decided not to include this. Now, this may sound like a pretty rational choice, makes sense, but we are living in polarized, very argumentative times. And so that decision by him was reflected as censorship in the British media, cancel culture. How dare he revise Shakespeare to the younger generation? And then he had to explain, listen, guys, I'm not censoring anything. I was just making a selection. There are other reasons not to include The Merchant of Venice in an anthology for children. It's about money. It's not exactly something that touches to their lives. And it happens to be anti-Semitic. Now, interestingly enough, after I published the article about it in JTA, I received a livid email from a person in the U.S. who does children's education, who said, well, I called Shylock greedy. So she wrote, how dare you call him greedy? That's just how people think of him. Well, I have my own opinions about this. I think Shylock is greedy. You can see it when his daughter escapes. He goes on about the jewelry that she took with her. That's his main concern. He's also angry at benevolent moneylenders who are bringing down the overall profession. He thinks that the interest should remain high, and so on. So there's all this, you know, this is a 400-year-old play and it's still generating such debate.
It's quite unbelievable, but I think it's necessary that we are careful about what our children are exposed to. And it's very important that this particular man has decided that in his anthology, like you said, he doesn't want a child's first exposure to another culture to be that in such a negative way. Talking about cultures, ritual slaughter is something that is a tradition, not just within the Muslim and Jewish communities, but other communities as well. But Belgium banned this, and it's now been upheld by a court in Europe. What does this say for religious freedoms?
Well, it says, we to be honest, we don't know exactly what it says, because now the ball is in the court of other European countries where populist trends are putting Shechita and Mila in danger. So the European court upheld that decision by two states of Belgium to ban the practice. And that means that other countries who wish to do so now know that they will not be challenged by the European court. Does that mean that they will actually go ahead and ban these customs? Well, at least Shechita, Mila is a separate debate. That remains to be seen. There's every reason to believe so, because it's recently been banned in Denmark. It's already illegal in Switzerland, Sweden, and there are heavy limitations on it in other European countries. Now, what's interesting about this ban, though, sorry about the ruling, is that in its reasoning, the court did something very unusual. It invented Jewish and Muslim customs, and it tacitly suggested that maybe the Jewish and Muslim customs can be adapted to fit the concerns of animal welfare activists who say that slaughtering an animal without stunning it first, as is required in halal and kosher meat production, is cruel. That's a very interesting step from the European court because it wades into a discussion, an internal discussion about religious rights in Judaism and Islam. And that's, I guess, the worrisome part of it. But this also has a positive lining, a silver lining, in which it opens the door to some compromises. For example, post-cut stunning is a method in which an animal has its neck slit and that immediately gets a bolt to the brain, which acts as stunning, so preventing it from allegedly suffering. There's also the possibility, at least for Muslims, of first electrocuting an animal and then killing it, because apparently there's a fatwa that says this does not make it impossible to produce halal meat. It's unfortunately not an option for Judaism, where the animal does not only need to be healthy and conscious, but intact and perfect. And so rabbinical edicts said that this is not an option for us. And that presents a new question, which is, will Jewish and Muslim communities be able to lobby in the future jointly? Because there's this loophole for Muslims that doesn't apply to Jews. So we are right now entering a new era in terms of religious liberties in Europe for Jews and Muslims. And how it will shape up precisely is anyone's guess at this point.
Knaan Lipschitz, thank you so much for joining us. I do apologize for any technical difficulties that you may have experienced from your side all the way from Europe. And to our listeners that may have also encountered technical difficulties, we look forward to chatting again to you soon. And like you said, this ruling regarding the ritual of killing or sacrificing animals raises more questions that may even unify different religions in their ongoing fight for religious freedom.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.